Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast. On a Monday, we're going to talk some USC Trojan football with Dan Weber, beat writer and columnist for USCFootball.com. Of course, the Trojans defeated the Bruins 28-23 Saturday night. In the Coliseum, we got a lot of questions, and we'll try our best to give you a lot of answers about what happened in the game, what's going forward, and all that kind of stuff. So questions or comments, you can email us, podcast@uscfootball.com, or give us a call or a text, and the number is 424-254-9141. So you can call or text that number, and we'll play it on the air or read it on the air and discuss whatever you have to say. Please let us know who your question is for. And, we look forward to hearing from you. We've sent a lot of questions in again this week, like pretty much every week of the season. So we'll do our best to answer all of those. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, iTunes.com/Peristyle Podcast or whatever your favorite podcasting app is. Please leave positive feedback. Please leave a 5-star rating. That would be wonderful. Help us grow the show. And it's been growing great all year. We appreciate all the new listeners and, we're ready to talk with Dan. What's going on, Dan? How are you doing?
Yep, let's get it going here.
It's there's a lot, Dan. There's a lot of questions, and it's are you kind of surprised at all the negativity? Like the team is now 10-2, won the Pac-12 South. They're gonna have a bye week heading into the Pac-12 championship game. Got an excellent shot. They'll be favored in that game. Are you kind of surprised? There's a lot of negativity around. Just so many USC fans are unsatisfied the way this team has looked all year.
I think I'm not, because I think there have been so few satisfying games. If you just go down the list, you know, the Stanford game was really satisfying. The second half of the Utah game, the Arizona State game, and not a lot more do you come away feeling good. If you're a USC fan, you don't feel that good, about this team. And so I know people will say, oh, they're 10-2, and they're going to be in the Pac-12 championship game and favored. But this was a team that was favored to be in the college football playoffs at the start of the year. And the Pac-12 has turned out to be significantly worse than people thought it was. I think it is. I mean, the ratings are such. All of college football is kind of worse than you thought it was going to be this year. So I just think, they just watch every game and see stuff that they really wish, wasn't happening. And I think last year, they saw a team that got better. And was kind of going somewhere by the end of the year. I don't know that any USC fan right now can say, man, we've really got it going into the Pac-12 championship game. This is where we wanted to be. We knew we'd be there, by this time. I don't think anybody could predict, what's this team going to do. I mean, it's so difficult. I mean, this is a team that is the number one scoring team in the fourth quarter in the country and the number 75th team in the third quarter coming out of halftime. The hot and cold, the on and off, they can do, things that are brilliant and then things that are just mind-boggling. You just can't believe your eyes. You see something and you say, did they really do that? So I can see, people were pretty upbeat coming off the Rose Bowl, and with Sam back and Rojo back and Cam Smith back and Porter Gustin and Chenanuso and all that. And I could see a reason that that they were pretty excited about where this was going, and they're getting there. But like the UCLA game, I mean, they might have played UCLA in terms of defending UCLA. They almost played as badly as anybody except UCLA didn't put points on the board for those 501 yards. And then UCLA has given up 302 yards a game on the ground. And USC with Ronald Jones, the sixth all-time leading rusher in USC history, ready to go past O.J. Simpson into number five, can only get 153 yards. Or they have to watch, Josh Rosen just absolutely carve up the USC secondary in a game where USC had all the opportunity to do that because UCLA brought up an extra guy into the box and were really taking some chances and giving USC deep balls that USC couldn't take advantage of. So I think I could absolutely understand, where they're coming from. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of the questions are kind of along that vein, so we'll get into that. But before we do, I wanted to thank our sponsor, Trader Joe's. They've been with us since back in August, and we really love the affiliation with Trader Joe's. They've been great to us. They've been in business for 50 years here in Southern California and across the country. They actually opened a new one. Hopefully, if you went to the USC-UCLA game, you picked up some tailgate stuff that you would need over at Trader Joe's. I walked over to campus to some people's tailgates and talked to a bunch of people that were over there at Trader Joe's. Even saw a couple of those USC Trader Joe's bags that we've talked about before that are really cool. Tried something new this week, Dan. So I've been a little under the weather. A lot of podcasting. I've been feeling kind of bad and sick. And my wife picked me up some of the Trader Joe's chicken noodle soup. So that was cool. Or chicken soup. And I tried that, so just kind of heated up, and that was really good stuff. So that was a new thing I got to try this week. But they got the staples. If you wanted to go get eggs, milk, bread, butter, they got a lot of frozen dinners that you can kind of heat up, and they look really good. Doesn't look like it's a Swanson things or anything. You heat them up and with rice and things like that, with a lot of different cool stuff you can get there. I love the beer and wine selection. Very cool stuff. Just go pick up a cool-looking six-pack of beer if you want to have fun with your friends over the weekend. Bye week for USC, so maybe pick up a few things at Trader Joe's, hang out, and watch some of the other Pac-12 football games.
Oh, and I've got it seems like every week, a Trader Joe's story. I have a neighbor from South Africa who was brought up Trader Joe's. We have a new supermarket right across the street, and big grand opening and all that. I was telling him the story about the manager offering to trade that supermarket's bag full of groceries eventually in order to get the Trader Joe's bag that someone had in the store. And she's telling me that my neighbor from South Africa said, "Oh, I'd drive anywhere to go to Trader Joe's." She said, "I used to be a wine broker back in South Africa." And she said, "They have a Chilean Cabernet Sauvignon for $4.99, that's just to kill for at Trader Joe's." So she just could not say enough good things about Trader Joe's. So every week I run into somebody who's telling me all this good stuff about Trader Joe's. So I can absolutely agree. I mean, totally out of the blue.
Yeah, nice. And thanks for their sponsorship. They've been a great partner with us. Hope to keep that going. We'll go to our first question. We'll do Earl in West LA, Dan. He said, "I agree this team should be more dominant, but can't seem to overcome flaws that keep victory in doubt until the final minutes of nearly every game. As you have said, they are who they are." So that's what Dan Thing's been saying. He said, "Frankly, I decided not to be discontented with this after reviewing what I have personally witnessed this past year. I've attended 9 games, starting with the Rose Bowl, the beatdown of Stanford, the thrill against Texas, and a bunch of flawed victories at the Coliseum and in Berkeley. I have not seen USC lose at home in over 2 years. In less than 2 weeks, I will see them again in Santa Clara playing for the conference championship. In order to get to this point, I had to endure scholarship limitations, sanctions, Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian, along with a Sun Bowl," ugh, he says, "and 2 Holiday Bowls, no offense, San Diego. I am really grateful we are where we are today after enduring all of that. Next year promises to be even better with the players we know are returning and could be off the charts if Sam returns. Sorry this is so long, but your podcast could use a positive perspective. Thanks for all you do. Happy Thanksgiving." Happy Thanksgiving to you too, Earl. Fight on, Earl in West LA.
Yeah, I mean, I Earl, you could absolutely make that case. I mean, honestly, if USC would happen to return everybody, I don't know what the likelihood of that could possibly be. But if they return Sam and Rojo and Cam Smith and Porter Gustin and all those guys who could or couldn't, you know, come back, man, I mean, is anybody on paper, you know, a better candidate, you know, with some of the young guys that missed this year? And, you know, and you always qualified by, say, if you coach them up, if, you know, if they play physical, if they, you know, play disciplined, some of the things they don't do, you know, if they figure out, you know, the run game, how to make it a little bit more, you know, certain, where in whatever situation you feel like, okay, we've got an answer for that. Or if people are going to try to totally take the run away, why is this team with this quarterback and these receivers not able to basically say, if you're going to take the run away, bring an extra guy in the box like UCLA did, we're going to hurt you badly. We're going to punish you. So there just seems to be not a, this has not been a year where you say they're way better now than they were. I mean, they'll make the case, and it's correct. They've got more receivers that you can count on. They're healthier than they've been. And yet, as the UCLA game shows, that didn't necessarily produce a result that made you feel like, okay, this team is where you want it to be. I mean, I think UCLA, for example, I think played much more close to its potential Saturday than USC did. And I think that's about the ninth or tenth time that's happened, where the other team has played closer to its potential than USC has. So you can say, well, it's great if you're a USC fan. We've got all that potential. And then you look at, you know, you look at the game and you say, yeah, it didn't exactly, you know, produce something. But you know, and there are always highlights. You can't not go to a USC game, maybe the Washington State game, Notre Dame, without highlights. But it's a roller coaster ride. And if you're a USC fan, maybe you just go there and say, I'm just going to enjoy the ride and and see what happens. Because yeah, they're usually there at the end of the game. USC, they seem like they're there. If the game's in doubt, most of the time they have the ability to make something happen, you know, that goes in their favor. But a lot of those, you wish they didn't have to do that at the end of the game.
Yeah. Jared in Utes Country says, hey, Dan and Ryan, congrats on another awesome regular season of coverage. You guys are the best, and thanks for all the hard work you do. Well, thank you very much, Jared. He said, my question is regard to Sam Darnold. Kirk Herbstreit said on Saturday night that he felt Sam should stay another year. This coming from a commentator that does not have any visibility into Darnold like you do. Dan, is Sam better off staying one more year from your perspective? That's from Jared in Utes Country.
You know, actually, I think he could really make that case. I think some of the issues, I do think he had more significant physical injury-type issues that caused him some problems. But there were some, you know, judgmental issues, just making the right judgments, making the right calls. I think I remember talking to Sam once about, I think somebody did a study that almost nobody who's played in the Super Bowl played fewer than 3 years as a college starter, or three real years of college football. Sam has basically had two, one as a redshirt. I think Sam paid attention to that. You know, I think he might be one of those guys that say, you know, I really could use the experience of just making that judgment, making all those judgments, throwing those balls away that I need to throw away, and all of that. That you would get more of that next year at USC, especially knowing that if you come back to USC again, they're in the hunt for the national championship almost certainly, and that everything you do really, really matters, and you're under a lot of pressure, and that's the kind of thing, whether you feel like you're doing all the right things, you know, in terms of the coaching, in terms of the offense, and what have you. I think you would get a chance to develop, you know, the kind of leadership. You know, Sam's got a lot of that, those leadership skills and those all the things, you know, those intangibles. But just in terms of just some of the judgment situations you find yourself in, you know, as a quarterback, I don't think the injury situation is quite the same as if you're a running back or a linebacker or whatever, if you're a quarterback. So I'm not sure that you're taking, you know, that big a chance. Now, and people point out the fact that by starting your first contract a year earlier, that really matters when you know, when you'll get to be a free agent. So, you know, there is a, you know, maybe a monetary thing. And there's a, you know, you're looking at where am I going to go if I go out? Where will I go in the draft and who will I go to? And I think those are so many things that you just can't figure out. But I think you could absolutely make the case that there would be a, you know, a good reason for Sam to come back next year.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Didn't really think that earlier, but I kind of think so now. Stephen Poway, dear Dan and Ryan, why have the tight ends all but disappeared from USC's offense? He said the offense is becoming very two-dimensional with handing off to Rojo and throwing to wide receivers. Thank you, Steve and Poway.
I think, you know, they got buffaloed by not having Daniel Motobebe, and I think he was going to be, from what we saw in the spring, I think they were thinking very much that they were going to throw the ball to Daniel Motobebe and Kerry Angeline, and how did that work out? You know, it just it went away. I don't know why we haven't gotten any really good, you know, insights as to what happened. I know Clay was very pleased against UCLA that T did have the ball thrown down the field a couple of times to Daniel. I think Daniel's you know, hip flexor issue was a big part of that, but it has to be. I mean, the offense hasn't been that smoothly, you know, transitioned from, say, okay, now Daniel is not there. What do you do? How do you? And I think, you know, in some cases they're making up for, okay, we don't trust the offensive line to do this, so we've got to have a tight end and we've got to help out blocking. I think there are times when USC kind of rationalizes what they're doing on offense sort of negatively. Like, oh, we can't do that. We can't do that. We got to help this guy. We have this guy stay in so we can do that. And they kind of take away their options at times. And I, you know, if it were me, I'd probably be a little bit more, the glass is half full. But you see some, you know, rationale with the USC coaches that the glass is half empty. And, you know, I know Clay says he's a glass half full guy, but I'm not sure that they actually coach him that way. They kind of coach him to play safe.
Yeah, a little too much playing safe, I think, with this squad. Let's see. Troy 75 has a question, too. He says, I watched a game the other night. I realized something. Whenever SC has a bad play, they seem to follow it up with a desperate play. For example, if they failed to make better than 2 yards on a first down, they almost always followed it with a pass. And if the pass was dropped, then they had third and long, and they had a very low conversion percentage on third and long. This pattern was particularly true in the third quarter. Being an old-timer, and I don't remember McKay or Robinson doing this, whether they made 2 yards or 4 yards on first down, McKay would call a second down play calculated to get them enough yards so they didn't have too many third and longs. Conservative, yes, but it seems that's how you keep a drive going. Am I wrong in thinking that there's a certain element of quote-unquote panic in USC's play calling? Lastly, could it be that Sam is audibling out of calls and creating the situation by trying to do too much? Maybe it would help to script the first 15 plays of the second half, which plays that anticipated the opponent's halftime adjustments. Thanks. I'm sorry. Just a thought from a humble football fan. Thanks and fight on. Troy 75.
Yeah, I do think Saturday was a case of a little bit of panic, a little bit of, as I call, grab bag, where you just pull out a play and say, man, I hope this thing works. And I think some of that was because they didn't do a very good – I mean, I think they were stunned that they couldn't run the ball that much, that they – you know, they found themselves with third and long because they tried to run it once or twice, and they just didn't do a very good job on first and or second down. That shocked me. I'm sure it shocked them. So then you have them, you know, just saying, well, what the heck can we throw in here on third down? That's why they were 2 for 10. I mean, that was just awful. That's unacceptable against UCLA, be 2 for 10 on third down conversions. I mean, they had a bad night. There's no question about it. And whether that's the bad night play calling followed bad execution, the inability to block people at the line of scrimmage, the fact that UCLA overloaded the box and USC didn't pick up on it immediately and take what was given them and you know, and make those plays. And I don't know that it's enough to just say, you know, we tried to take some shots down the field. We just couldn't hook up with them or whatever. No, that's not good enough. This team, if the T. Martin says, this could be the best group of wide receivers he's ever had at USC, the best group, well, then you ought to be able, with Sam Darnold as your quarterback, to figure out ways, if they're going to put an extra man in the box to stop the run, they ought to be giving you the passing game. That ought to be a given. That it wasn't says something about this is not an offense that you can really trust. And where do you go, you know, in terms of, you know, pointing the finger, you know, for that? There's a whole lot of ways. They've got to block better at the line of scrimmage. They just have to do a better job. But then the quarterback, wide receiver, the patterns have to be probably sharper. You can't have those plays where you end up with a couple of guys in the same spot. The receivers are fighting for the ball better. I don't think there's any quite better than they were at the beginning of the year and at the 50-50 balls and things like that. But something's kind of missing. This team ought to be sharper. When somebody will give you the deep ball, you ought to be able to take it. I know, okay, you can say, well, they don't have any super speed burners, but they got enough athletes who've got enough talent, you know, to get the job done. If you have to bring Stephen Carr in, you bring Stephen Carr in. But, I mean, he did it once. But I just think it's not clear-cut in everybody's mind after a week of practice. What are we going to do? And just do it. And it still looks like they're trying to find something. And I don't think in Game 12 you ought to be struggling to find what you're going to do. You ought to be able to do it. You know, they're going to line up. They're going to do what they do on defense, and you just do what you do on offense. It shouldn't be kind of the big deal that it seems to be for USC to figure out what it has to do.
Let's go to a voicemail, Dan. Here's one for you.
Hi, this is Daniel out of Los Angeles. Question for Dan or Coach, whoever comes first. My question is, how long will Lynn Swann or the USC boosters accept 10-2 seasons going forward? But unfortunately, in college football, two losses do not get you into the playoffs. They do not get you into a chance of winning a championship, unless it was to move to an 18 playoff. But until then, two losses is a good season, but it's in the eyes of a blue blood football team, it would be considered a failure. Only because you can't get the playoffs. Now that there's a playoffs, I believe the fans, alumni, everybody wants to get to the playoffs. That's probably why no one's really happy with a 10-2 season. Even winning the Fiesta Bowl, it's still like an empty feeling inside that you could have been in the playoffs. You know, I mean, I bet the people rather lose in the playoffs than lose in the Fiesta Bowl or even win the Fiesta Bowl, because the fact that you made it that far. I mean, either way, you have to be in it to win it. You have to be in the playoffs to win the championship. So if you lose there, fine. That's good. You had a great season. You made it. But yeah, how long do you think 10-2 seasons will last at USC? Thanks.
That's a good question. I mean, Lynn Swann was not happy with the Rose Bowl last year. And this year, you know, the ideal would have been to get to the Rose Bowl because it's a playoff bowl. Not doing that will not be not be something that makes a lot of people happy, just because USC started out the year pretty much in the conversation, pretty much in those four or five teams that these are the teams that are going to be in the playoffs. If you end up not being there, if you end up losing to a team like Washington State, we know all the excuses, the short week. Hell, first of all, somebody ought to be complaining about the short week. USC should not have accepted that. Clay says not his job to say anything. I think it is the football coach's job. If you're going to be disadvantaged by scheduling, then I think you need to talk up about the scheduling. And the preparation that week was terrible. The game plan was terrible. Yeah, they were injured, but this shouldn't have happened. So, 10-2 and 11-1, that's a really big difference. And the whole conversation is different. And it wouldn't have taken a lot to change, the conversation. But 10-2, makes you a top 10 team, and you're in the hunt for the Pac-12. You're in the hunt for a decent bowl game, but you're not in the hunt for the national title. According to Clay, according to Lynn, that's got to be the goal. And the ultimate goal has to be the national championship, but the intermediate goal always has to be the Pac-12. And when you're looking around at the Pac-12 these days, that's not unrealistic at all. I mean, who should beat USC any year in the Pac-12? Nobody. I mean, really, nobody. With USC's history, with its location, with its tradition, with everything that USC, the school where it is now, and all of the things that USC's got going for, its ability to recruit, who should beat USC in the Pac-12? Nobody. So year after year, USC should dominate. I mean, if Alabama can dominate in the SEC, USC actually has a better chance of dominating the Pac-12 than Alabama has of dominating the SEC. So I think they just, they're not going to be happy with 10-2, as constituted. They're just not. I mean, they're not going to be happy with years when you lose to Washington State. They're not. And I don't think, I mean, I know there's that big argument going on between the people who say, man, this is great, and it's top 10 and it's going to be a good bowl, and we're in the hunt for the Pac-12, and we're better than last year. I know Clay has made the point that this year they're 8-1 in the Pac-12. They control their own destiny, and that's a step up from last year. It is indeed. But last year, I think you felt this momentum, and they weren't kind of necessarily doing things that made it hard for them to get better week to week. You don't feel that same thing this year. So, this season is in an unusual place for 10-2 season at this point in time, and that's probably a good thing. I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing if USC fans aren't happy with 10-2, or losing to Washington State, or laying a complete egg at Notre Dame and going up there and realizing, wow, they really want to beat us, and this is a big deal, and it's really important to them. Man, I wish we had known that before we got here. Those kinds of things are kind of unacceptable.
Yeah, it is, Dan, and I can sense the frustration in the USC fans, and we appreciate you kind of talking about that. Before we jump into more of these questions, I wanted to tell everybody about SeatGeek. If you want to buy tickets to sporting events or concerts, it can be complicated. But there's a better, simpler way to buy using SeatGeek. It is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek will help you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person. Of course, for everyone out there, that's the USC Trojans, as far as the sports team go. SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. And of course, USC doesn't have any more home games left, but does have the Pac-12 championship game. So I have it up on my app, the app on my phone. So go to your phone and you can download the SeatGeek app. It's really cool because it'll show you where all the seats are in the stadium. There's a lot, actually, for the Pac-12 championship game. And like the cheapest ones, the best deal out there, it's $24 right now if you want to go to the Pac-12 championship game. But it's cool. You can click on which seats are. They'll show you kind of the view from where you're going to be, where you're going to be sitting. I have an Android phone. It says you can pay with Android right on your phone. So all that stuff is pretty cool. It's a great app. It's a great experience if you want to try it out. And there's a call to action here. If you want to do this, if you want to try SeatGeek for yourself, download the SeatGeek app, and you will get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So just download the app and use the promo code USC. That's promo code USC for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Yeah, there's a lot of seats available, Dan, for this one.
Yeah, I would think so. That Friday night is not ideal for fans to get there. I mean, even from, you know, Southern California. It's just, again, between the Pac-12 and USC, they aren't making it very easy for fans to attend games. I mean, I think something's going to have to happen in the near future to keep people coming to games. And you know, televising of games has gotten so much better, and the camera work and all the angles and the replays and you know, everything that you can get. And then they make it harder and harder and more expensive to park and more difficult to get in and out and the security. And, you know, then they're going to play it on Friday night. You know, how hard is it to get into, you know, Silicon Valley on a Friday night? I mean, there are not enough roads as it is. You know, we worry about traffic in Southern California, but you get up in the Bay Area, they're just kind of landlocked in a ways that they just don't have enough, you know, land area that they can dedicate the roads. And getting in and out of Santa Clara on a Friday night is a challenge if you're a USC fan. So you'd love to see not so many tickets available and people having to rush to get them. But, you know, if the good news is, if you decide at noon, no, I guess not noon, if you decide at 10 in the morning on Friday that you wanted to go to the game, you can go to the game, yeah. And you can buy a ticket. So that's the good news, and we would encourage everybody to do that.
Yeah, it's funny. My buddy Sean, who I went to college with, he called me, and I sent him to SeatGeek, and he's like, hey, thanks. So they end up buying pretty good tickets. So you can get good seats on there. So definitely check it out. Promo code USC, you got $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Let's jump back to the questions.
Levi's is not our favorite place to watch a game.
No.
With the entire 8-level wall of you know, private boxes and that. But the seats are good. I mean, it's a good stadium to watch a game in. Doesn't have a lot of like life to it, but you can watch the game well there. And so from that standpoint, not too many seats are really bad seats.
Yeah. Let's move on. Man, we got so many questions, so we'll try to go through them all. Gene says, hey, this is Gene from the OC. I think it's time to quit sugarcoating and admit this is a poorly coached team. If changes are not made, we will have another lackluster season next year. There is only one coach who should stay, and that's the running back coach. So he's talking about Dylan McCullough. As for the Bruin game, if Rosen had been under the same pressure as Darnold, he would not have completed nearly the same amount of passes. Why were we not blitzing more and putting pressure on him? If you watch the game, it's so easy to see what's wrong. Why can't our coaches see and correct the problem? Don't we have one decent defensive back who can cover? Why do so many of our players have their jerseys hanging out? Poor discipline. Please have Dan comment on all of this. Fight on, Gene. Gene doesn't happy with anything. He doesn't even like
jerseys. Sure. It's probably a hard case to make that USC doesn't put quarterbacks under pressure. I mean, they do have the most. And now they played 12 games, and a lot of teams have only played 11. But they do have the most sacks of any team in the country with 41. And they did out-sack. You know, they had four sacks on Rosen. UCLA had only one on Sam. A little bit of that is Sam's escapability. But I don't know that you can fault them there. What you might be able to fault them for is just what's going on with the coverage. I mean, how do you get beat the way they've gotten beat two times last week at Colorado and then a couple of the beats that happened in this game. I mean, they're just inexcusable. I mean, it's not like USC doesn't have five-star corners that are, you know, back-to-back considered the best athletes in the country coming out of high school. That's a little disheartening to watch what's happened with USC secondary. And I remember back in the day, USC corners prayed for Pete Carroll to let him play man. I mean, I remember Terrell Thomas saying his senior year he had 10 plays where he got to play man, and he thought that was enough to show the NFL. Now, this team gets to play man a lot, and they do that because they really need to help the run defense, help the pressure on the quarterback. So they let him play man a lot. And we always hear it like, man, we're taking such a chance. We're putting them out on an island. You would think, well, great. USC's receivers or defensive backs ought to feel good about, you know, being out on an island. I'm just not seeing that kind of, you know, when you talk to the USC secondary, you get the sense that much of this year they thought they were as good as any secondary in the country. And the disconnect between what they think about themselves and what they do in these games, really makes you wonder, what is going on? Will changes have to be made? Yeah, absolutely. Changes are going to have to be made. This is a lot of, you know, what they're doing isn't acceptable. But I do think they really work at getting pressure. They do. I mean, they've done a pretty good job, and without a Porter Gustin and losing Marlon to a Peluto and people like that, and Christian Rector for some of the year, I still think they've done a pretty good job getting pressure. Are they having to do too much to get that pressure? I mean, I guess that's one of the questions you have to answer. But secondary's got to step up, and we just aren't seeing that at all.
Speaking of the secondary, good segue. Brian from Baldwin Hill said, what is your honest assessment of defensive back coach Ronnie Bradford? I feel like he is the most reclusive of all the coaches. I don't even think I know what he looks like. The other coaches do interviews or are shown on TV at times. For example, T, D-Lind, and even Coach Callaway have all been interviewed for the site. However, rarely do we see Ronnie Bradford. My concern is the DBs in particular, the cornerback play, has been very questionable this season. This coupled with the fact that many have mentioned that he doesn't like recruiting and has dropped the ball with several recruits. Additionally, isn't he tied to Clancy Pendergast in that he was the only choice when he agreed to accept the job, so it may be difficult to replace him. What are your thoughts, Brian and Baldwin Hills?
I think Brian and Baldwin Hills has pretty much touched on what the issues are. I mean, there they are. You put them out there, Brian. Those are all things that people think about and wonder. I mean, we don't see the improvement. I don't think there's any question. We don't. And, we see guys doing 360-degree spin moves, or we see poor Isaiah Langley on a play where the only possible salvation for UCLA Josh Rosen's under so much pressure, and he's about to get pounded into the ground. He has no chance to complete a ball. Throws it up just for grabs, I guess, fourth down. Only hope UCLA had on that play was for some USC defender to grab some guy. And Isaiah did. And you just think, man, you got to be smarter than that. Or the ball, or the body control, for example. USC has two great athletes on a deep ball, both of whom get there first, and one of them bats the ball off the other's helmet, and it drops down into Jordan Lasley's, arms as he's lying on the ground. I mean, I think that's coaching. Just that, there are plays going to be made in the air, and you have to be under control. And there are times you just think they're not quite under control. Don't exactly know where the ball is. And when you have two guys who get to the ball first and the other guy gets the completion lying on the ground, you're probably not doing something right. And you got to get better at that. You do. You just do.
And they're not. They haven't got better. So we understand that's a real problem. We got Steve right in and said, is this 10-2 USC team, quote-unquote, awesome or quote-unquote, awful? Because they can't be both. Can they? P.S. Dan, do you think asking the difficult questions about next year's Pac-12 football schedule he said thank you for asking the difficult questions about next year's Pac-12 football schedule to Coach Clay Helton.
Yeah. Not that we got any answers. Yeah, I think somebody has to ask those questions. I wish somebody at USC were asking those questions. This shouldn't be happening. I mean, no other conference in America would schedule itself out of the national championship hunt in like the first couple of weeks. I mean, it's just not going to happen. They're too smart to do that. And then the Pac-12 comes up with all these stupid answers as to why USC and Stanford have to play so early, or why USC gets the first Friday night game every year, or all the things that the Pac-12 does. So yeah, those schedules help make it a season where you can have awful elements and awesome elements combined. Very often in the same week, the same game, the same quarter. That's who this team is. I mean, the lack of discipline on some of the dumb penalties. To have 11 penalties for 115 yards, that means you averaged more than 10 yards a penalty. So USC didn't even mess around with 5-yard penalties. I mean, you can't average more than 10 yards a penalty almost if you have any 5-yarders. So USC just went for the major penalties against UCLA. No messing around. 11 for 115. That's beyond acceptable. I mean, that just cannot be accepted. That lack of discipline, that selfishness. I mean, that's people putting themselves ahead of the team. I mean, you block a guy out of bounds, and then just for the hell of it, you know, 3 or 4 yards out of bounds, you go hit him again. No, you already knocked him out of bounds. What are you trying to do? You know, you just don't do stuff like that if you're trying to help your team. But there's just not enough of that. And, you know, I forgot to mention, somebody talked about the shirts out and some of the issues with uniform. I do think there's a little bit more of the look at me, stuff with the USC's. And what you have now is you see guys who decided, okay, they're not allowed to wear the black socks, but they don't maybe like the white socks. So you'll see, maybe 3 out of 11 guys with the red tights on and no white socks. So now you've got, 8 guys maybe with white socks and 3 guys with what look like red socks. It's just little stuff, or guys put the tape around their shoes, or they put the black the black tape on their ankles above their low cut cleats, and it's just like a kind of a look at me, which is some of the celebrating and what have you. I mean, I find it hard to watch in the secondary when, let's say, the opponent quarterback will throw the ball away and it's just not close, and the USC guys are given that incomplete signal, real definitive and real, look at me. It's an incomplete pass. Come on, just get ready for the next play. I mean, really, there's more look at me stuff, and I know it's a different age, and you sound like, get off my lawn, get off my lawn guy. You don't need to do that. Really, you don't. We're paying attention to you. We really are, and USC fan base, I think, is smart enough to know if you made a good play. You don't have to tell them, and you don't have to tell them you made a good play when the other guy made a bad play. I mean, don't take credit for incomplete passes that they had no chance of completing. Just move on to the next play and be ready for the next play. But I'm seeing a little more of that than I would like in a disciplined team.
Yeah. Well, UCLA ended up having 12 penalties for 100 yards, so not quite the average USC had. And Harvey Hyde mentioned that yesterday, too. He's like, did you notice that a lot of the DBs and wide receivers were wearing, like, red socks? And I'm like, no, I didn't really notice that. He's like, I noticed that stuff. So I know you do, and I know other people do. So it's
they call them uniform for a reason. They're uniforms. Everybody's supposed to look the same. You know, everybody's supposed to wear the same look. And, you know, if you really want to need those red tights, you still ought to put the white socks over them. I mean, there really ought to be. There ought to be somebody, I would think, monitoring that look. You know, just say, look, guys, we're all in this together. We don't need, you know. I mean, what's the next thing? A guy's going to put his name on the back of his jersey and tape or something, you know? I mean, stop it.
Yeah. We got a text from George. He said, I've heard you say several times that CCH, that's Coach Clay Helton, when asked about Pac-12 officiating and scheduling, quote-unquote, wasn't going there. When will the time come that he will, quote-unquote, be going there? I don't understand why CCH or Lynn Swann or other coaches and ADs around the conference don't go there either, or have they? I really don't see much changing in the conference until Larry Scott has some real heat put on him. Looking forward to your response. Fight on, George and Oxnard.
Yeah, I would like to see the coaches, you know, kind of join one another. I think that would be the way to do it, because we really don't know. I mean, they could not keep it more secret what they do in terms of their Monday evaluations and the tape with comments that they send. You know, into the league office. I mean, the league has done everything you would think. I mean, you can't do more than have a vice president for football officiating of a full-time job of a former NFL, longtime NFL official, a retired Army colonel, you know, a well-respected guy. That's all he does. And it doesn't seem to have made much difference at all. I mean, over the years, if they get a good official, he's gone to the NFL. And I you would like to see the ADs in the Pac-12 just don't seem to do anything. I mean, I wish the ADs would concentrate on the TV stuff, and I wish the coaches would concentrate on the officiating stuff. But you'd love to see. It would have some impact if you could get all the coaches together and start. I mean, I don't know that they can fine all of them if they all came out with, you know, with some sort of a statement. But I don't think it would be a bad idea. I don't know how that gets organized, who starts it, whatever. But something has to happen, I think. It's just they're not competent, and they're not confident. I mean, Saturday's game was remarkable. You had very few replay reviews, and you did have an overturn or so. There shouldn't have to be that many in the Pac-12, but some of the games have been ridiculous, and just those alone ought to be reason for coaches to come out and say, you know, there's too much downtime, there's too much you know, having to throw it to the booth because the guys on the field didn't see it. I mean, I saw, for example, that Sam's knee was down. I don't think there was any. It wasn't like. I didn't think it was a close call. Nobody on the field saw it. Not one of those seven officials saw it. And that's not. How's that possible? That quarterback, on a scramble, the whole stadium is watching him. Everybody on both teams is. What else could the officials be watching? And they don't see that his knee is down before the ball pops out, and they all get it wrong. Well, that's unacceptable. That whole crew ought to have to respond, and I'd like them to have to respond in writing. How did you miss that call? How did no one in that? How was no one in that crew sighted up to see Sam's knee was down? How's that possible? It shouldn't be.
No.
But it's the Pac-12, so. I guess it's possible.
Incompetence. That's a great way to put it. We had a voicemail, two voicemails actually, from Kaz, I think he said his name was. Both of them were like 2 minutes long. Kaz was way too long. We can't have that, especially two of them. But his points were, he wants to see Sam Darnold run more. And then he also commented, we had a caller, Don, for Harvey Hyde's show, really ripping into Jack Jones and Chuma Adoga for being selfish players for like the penalties and stuff that they've been getting. So Don was ripping into that, and Kaz was agreeing with what Don had to say.
Hard to agree, to not agree. The selfishness, it's just, it can't be part of this program. You just can't put yourself, your own emotions, your own, you know, frustrations, your own lack of concern about your teammates ahead of anything else. And that just looks like, I almost, if it weren't Chuma, you almost give him a pass, because the play where he gets the penalty is a scrum where clearly the USC kid has been stopped. He's being held up. He's not going anywhere. And the whistle doesn't blow. And they're like dancing, down, one of the yard markers. And Chuma, I know, says, oh, okay, I got a shot. No whistle. I'm going to take somebody out. And he probably got his shot in before they finally blew their whistle. But that's where you got to be smart enough and say, wait a minute, just because they haven't blown their whistle doesn't mean they're not going to probably tag me if I come in. Plus, it was a cheap shot. So you don't do it, even if you think you've got a chance to do it. And the same way with Jack. Spend less time talking, less time, whatever, and just get better. Work at it. Discipline yourself. It's just too important for your future, for both of those guys who clearly want to play at the next level. You got a lot of work to do to get better and to get consistent and to do all the things that are going to make you able to play at that level. But it's really important for you, and time to grow up.
Yeah, I agree there. Sorry, if you want to send in some shorter voicemails, that'd be great. We just can't play four-minute voicemails on the podcast. It's long enough already. This is really good. Eric in Duck Country, do you think this team will be able to stay focused during the bye week, or will this be like the Holiday Bowl a couple of years ago? Thanks, as always, Eric in Duck Country. I think it's going to be an interesting topic to talk about, Dan. What are your thoughts?
Focused on what? The turkey? And they're really not. They're having a walkthrough. And maybe, getting rested up and rehabbing and all of that is the thing to focus on. And if that's where the focus is, that's great. But there's not a lot of short yardage offense being run this week. And we'll see. We'll see how that plays out. It did not play out all that well at the Holiday Bowl, as we all remember. Now, one of the differences there was they were playing Wisconsin, who was, hitting and hitting and hitting, and came up, came to the Holiday Bowl and out-hit them. You've got the choice. You may get Stanford, you may get Washington State. If you get Stanford, may not work so well, that you're going to have two real practices in 2 weeks. And there, two full real practices now. The normal Thursday practice, which will be a Wednesday practice, is a little bit abbreviated and is more of a refreshing of what you're going to do in the game. But basically, they're calling tomorrow's practice more of a walkthrough. Today, they're not even calling it a practice. So. And we're not allowed to, to be around. So we're not really sure what they're doing. So that means that next Monday and Tuesday are there essentially two regular practices in 2 weeks. We'll see. I mean, they didn't come out and hit when they played Washington State. They short week, they took it easy that week, and they really weren't ready to play. And Washington State out hit them, which was, I think, one of the really embarrassing moments of this year. So we'll know the answer, Friday, December 1st, as to whether, which of those two prevailed. Did it get them back into, feeling fine and physical shape and ready to go out and knock somebody's block off, or did it get him out of the, you know, the ability to, you know, to go out and hit with people? We'll see. I mean, I wouldn't be averse to them going full pads next Monday, for example. Yeah. I don't think that would be that'd be the worst idea in the world.
I think it'd be a great idea, actually. I think it'd be a great idea, actually, not the worst idea.
Yeah, set the tone for, you know, this is going to be either way, you're going to have to play a physical Stanford team, who that's what they do, or a Washington State team that if you really are physical with them, they can't do what they want to do. So in both cases, I think, you know, becoming as physical as you can be and knowing that you've had a week off and you're going to have, you know, 2 weeks to get ready for a game, it might not be a bad idea to refresh, especially, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the goal line stuff and the short yardage stuff. I really think going in full pads, you don't have to go full pads to full practice, but I do think it really helps you. It's just muscle memory and just getting that, just that timing down exactly right. Because if you're out there in shorts, you aren't going to be on the ground if you're blocking people at the line of scrimmage. You're just not. You're doing more standing than you are the kind of blocking that you're actually doing in a game. In a game, in a short yardage situation, almost everybody's on the ground. There's a big pile. You go and do that in practice with shorts, and there's no pile. So when people say, oh, it's no difference whether you're in shorts or not, yes, it is a difference. You don't have big piles. And, you know, I just think it would help them in short yardage more than anything if they went in pads at least once.
Ben in the Central Valley wrote this during the game. He said, do we really not have a better cornerback than Jack Jones? He's been getting destroyed tonight. I really hope we have an underclassman or recruiting some help in the secondary because Jones doesn't look like he belongs on the field. Man, he gets a lot of criticism. Besides that, the dude's got an ego and an attitude that shows up in a negative way every week. Hope some more mature guys are quote-unquote next up. That's from Ben.
Well, I mean, I think you make the point. If you are going to be one of those look-at-me players, you got to make plays. You can't say, look at me, uh-oh, I just got burned. Look at me. Uh-oh, I just got a penalty. No. You know, if you want to be Deion Sanders, you at least better play the pass well. And, you know, and to be honest, Jack Jones is pretty good against the run. We don't notice that as much you know, because the other things are stuck in your memory. But yeah, it's a shame. I would have loved to see, you know, freshman Greg Johnson not get hurt and get a chance to play. I really liked his potential. I mean, there is a kid on the team named Jamel Cook who's got a lot of ability. He wasn't dressed for Saturday. We're still not sure what exactly is going on there. But you know, you'd love to see somebody like that get a chance. But they can't put you in the game if they didn't let you come out in your uniform. So what you've got there is what you've got there. And Jonathan Lockett not able to play this year, so there are not a lot of options behind the guys that are on the field. They kind of got to come through for you. And certainly the last couple of weeks, when you give Colorado 486 yards, much of that passing, even though you shut their run down, you give UCLA 501 yards, whatever it was, 422 passing, something like that. That's just unacceptable.
Yeah, 421 passing yards for UCLA. We have we have two more for you, a voicemail and then one more email, and we'll let you go, Dan. We actually have a whole bunch more, but since it's a bye week, we're going to save some of these like non-specific ones for the game itself. We'll save those and we'll play them during our next week's show. I'm sure we'll get more questions in, but it'll just give us more to talk about next week's
great
show. All right, here's the last voicemail.
JD from DC. Question for Dan. Assuming we're all still getting over our celebration for having beaten UCLA this weekend, I wanted to revisit the whole Pat Hayden scenario, because it seems to me he was able to like kind of slink out of town without really having to respond to the allegations of despicable skimming from a charitable college foundation fund. This from a multimillionaire developer and
I guess I cut off there, but he wants you to comment on Pat Hayden.
Let me see. Honestly, I know for some people to revisit, you know, Pat Hayden's 6-year run as athletic director. I just rather not. I still think this Coliseum thing is going to be one of the lasting the renovation and the cutting the seats way back and building this big mausoleum of a tower is going to be another thing that will be the last gift from Pat to the USC athletic program, and I'd really just hope to put that all behind you and just let it go into the ether. Pat's no longer part of this program, and not somebody who is around and is part of it in any way. And I think that's not a coincidence that that you don't see Pat around at all. And it's a shame, but it just didn't work out for Pat or USC, unfortunately. It's the Sarkisian hire was one thing, the Coliseum and the Pac-12 negotiations are others that just keep going on and on and on.
Yeah. And then one last one, Paul in Vegas. He says, just now watching the UCLA game, so I don't know if it's going to be a joyous locker room after the game or a place of inconsolable misery. The question is, are the recruits present for this game allowed into the locker room after what I'm hoping is going to be the festive celebration marking our 10th win this season? Paul in Vegas.
Oh, they're allowed in. Whether they got to see much celebration, I'm kind of doubting it. I think everybody was just, they got out of there fast. this did not seem like, whoopee-doo, we won our 10th game. We beat UCLA 3 straight times. I think everybody knew how that game went. And to be honest, I think as much as it hurt, I think the UCLA kids felt better about themselves after that game, than the USC kids did. They survived. They know they did. And they lived to play another day. And, the W, they got the W. But other than that, I don't get the sense that and there were a lot of kids there, and they get to go in. We don't get to go in the locker room, but they get to go into the locker room while we wait to go into the media room. So you get to see them all, ushered in there. And they didn't look like they were all that excited. And it just wasn't a place where everybody was much excited about anything after the UCLA game. It was over is kind of how everybody felt. And let's hope it's better at the Pac-12 championship game. And that was about it. Not a lot of emotion.
Yeah, it was funny. All. On the field, so I was down on the field and you were down on the field. And the fans, I think the USC fans that were there, that got passes, they seemed pretty excited. They were jumping around. The players, there was a lot of USC and UCLA players meeting together, people that played on the same high school team, getting pictures. But it was just kind of I think it's a great way you described it. It was over. It wasn't there wasn't fighting. There wasn't any kind of, it was just a lot of the people that knew each other came together in the middle of the field and took selfies with each other.
Right. Well, if we'd have shown you, say, 50 selfies from after the game, you would have had no idea which team won and which team lost. Because most of the selfies had players from both teams in them. And you would have had, with the greetings and the hugs and everything, you'd have had no idea that, A, this was a gigantic rivalry game, or B, who won? I mean, it just wasn't any way to know that. It was an odd sort of finish. I'm not sure I've seen a USC-UCLA game end quite the way that one did. That just, it was over. And then everybody came and hung out on the field. And yeah, you're right. The parents, the families, I think, were really happy because those were the USC kids whose families were on the field.
Yeah.
And they were really happy that they didn't lose. But that was probably the only emotion that you saw there. They were really happy they didn't lose.
It's a great way to put it, too. It's like you just wouldn't know if you looked at it like, hey, which team won? Like, I don't know, the red team or the blue team? Like, it didn't really – and there's fighting, there's something, you know, controversy. There really wasn't anything like that. The only controversy is that Jim Mora ends up getting fired, like, within 24 hours.
Well, and that's the other thing that was interesting. So we're going – and I remember vividly 4 years ago, and he was a – horses, you know, patoot, when he had that, you know, press conference almost with his team talking about owning LA and blah, blah, blah. He did it right in the middle of the tunnel and you couldn't miss it. And everybody's half in the wall and he's loud enough for USC kids to hear it and all of that. And he was, you know, life was great. USC was still suffering badly from the sanctions and he got his third straight win against USC teams that weren't always that, you know, had the benefit of the best preparation. And then last week, Keeley and I are going out to do the instant analysis, and we're walking down the tunnel, and there's nobody left. I mean, it's way – and all of a sudden, here you notice it's Jim Mora, and it looked like his mom and some relatives, maybe, you know, family – and a couple of the people at UCLA, like the security guy and what have you, and they're walking, and they're just starting to come out. And if he didn't know what was going to happen, I'd be shocked because it couldn't have been quieter. And in virtually the same spot where 4 years before he had been making all this noise and all, you know, here he is, very meek and very mild, and everybody's kind of got their heads down, and they're just very quietly starting to walk up the tunnel. And I'm thinking, if you've ever said what goes around comes around, that's the perfect case. And we've heard, you know, a lot of good things about Jim Mora in terms of some of the, you know, the charities he's helped and the people he's helped. And yet he had the ability to do things that just made you crazy. But he was, he could not have been farther removed from where he was 4 years ago in that same, exact same spot in the USC tunnel. And, you maybe, you know, a good lesson there might be you just don't get too full of yourself when things are going your way because there's no guarantee they're gonna keep going your way.
Yeah.
Because they may not.
Well, don't feel bad for Jim Mora. He's got $12 million bucks.
Right, and that was interesting because you could tell these people around him were feeling really bad for him. And you do think, gosh, the guy's, you know, walking away with as much of that $12 million as they can negotiate for in a settlement. And life is still pretty good for Jim Mora.
I mean, for the head coach, it's usually fine because you get paid a lot of money. It's all the support staff, all the assistants. Like, you know, there's guys that make 40 grand that are out on the street and they might not get another 40 grand job after that. You know, that's where it's kind of like, okay, you feel bad for those people.
Yeah. You really do. And those were some of the people maybe walking out with him. And, you just had the sense that he knew what was coming. They said it, you know, he wasn't told till he got back to the UCLA campus, but, you really had a sense that, he knew it was over.
Well, Dan Weber, thanks so much for sharing all your insights. Thanks, everyone, for sending in those questions. And we do thank Trader Joe's and SeatGeek for sponsoring our little podcast. Dan, well, enjoy the bye week.
Yeah.
I'm glad we don't have to go to practice this week, I guess. But we'll just, you know, I needed a bye. Like, I've been run down and being sick.
It's a quote, and you just quoted, I think, a USC player, right?
Yeah, I need Maybe.
Glad we don't have to go to practice.
Yeah. I don't want to go there. But, well, I mean, it's funny. I told my wife this morning, I told Jana, I mean, I've been sick, run down the last few days, and it's like, man, I really needed the bye week. And to hear the players talk about, I've never played 12 weeks in a row before. It's true. It's like never in your life would you have had to do that. Like no one expects you to do that except the Pac-12.
Yeah, and then they jerk you around with times and short weeks and all that. I think the worst thing you can say about the Pac-12 is for 2 years they made, what was it, 6, 7, 8 teams, I guess, play a short Friday game week after traveling the week before. And it was like, well, that's, you know, what can you do? It's a TV. Well, they got enough criticism, and I think we may have started it, but they got enough criticism this year that magically there are none of those games next year. They got rid of them all. Oh, you mean you could have got rid of them if somebody would have complained? This is where, I mean, I think the first time I wrote about it was the first day that schedule appeared last January, and we started complaining.
Yeah.
And you think, what if USC would have started complaining? Like in December when they saw the schedule. And you know, you just think, come on, speak up. It's the Pac-12. If you criticize the Pac-12, 99% of the country will agree with you. It doesn't matter what you criticize them for. It's the Pac-12. They'll be on your side. You're always going to look right, and you're going to look smart if you criticize the Pac-12. I mean, it's just, unfortunately, that's the situation we're in.
Yeah. It's funny, David. So we did our podcast of champions. Make sure you check it out, Pac-12podcast.com. David Woods and I, David Woods from Bro. He's really funny and snarky. And he described the schedule as, he goes, the last couple of years, it's looked like it was just like this computer-generated thing that nobody, like no human even looked at because for the obvious like screw-ups. And he goes, this time it looked like a human actually might have reviewed it, you know? And like that's how bad it was. Like did they really take into account anyone complaining about anything? It's like now they're like, man, everyone's bitching about this. Well, okay, maybe we shouldn't do this stupid thing and this stupid thing. And it's not that hard to avoid those things, but it was like, it was really like a computer generated thing that a human didn't look at.
Yeah, it went straight out. And that's where, and we have been critical. You know, the first thing you criticize the Pac-12, then you criticize USC for not criticizing the Pac-12 and not standing up for their players and not saying, we're not going to make them go to Pullman, Washington, on a Friday night for Washington State's fifth straight home game, where they're just sitting there and just building, and USC having to go, you know, for another Saturday road trip and then a Friday road trip. And how easy it would have been for USC to say, no, we're not doing that. We're just not. Sorry. And for that, I blame USC, because if they'd have done that, you lose the game 30-27 on the final field goal and what have you. They were awful, but maybe they wouldn't have been quite so awful if it wasn't on Friday night. Maybe they wouldn't have prepared quite so badly if they'd have realized we have actually a full week to prepare for this game. But the whole idea was in their head, and they tiptoed through that week of practice. They had the worst game plan ever. If they walk away from Pullman with a win in that game, they're 11-1 now. Where are they ranked in the country? I don't know. Fourth, maybe? They probably wouldn't have gotten blown out by Notre Dame because they'd have gone into Notre Dame unbeaten. And they'd have gone into Notre Dame probably number four in the country. And that game would have mattered. That would have been the biggest game in the country. And USC probably would have shown up and probably would have played. And if they don't give Notre Dame 21 points to start with, who knows how that game goes? But little things matter. And USC has to start paying attention to those kinds of little things. You can't just say, oh, scheduling is scheduling. Oh, you know, they do the best they can. No, they don't. They haven't. It's obvious they haven't done the best they can in scheduling last year compared to next year. They did better next year. And that's a great comment by David. It looks like this year for next year, someone actually looked at the schedule and said, where are we going to get hammered if we send this thing out? And they said, okay, let's don't do that, and let's don't do that. Yeah, maybe we can get away with sending USC to a Friday night game after they go to Texas and Stanford. Yeah, we can probably get away because that game's going to be at the Coliseum. And, of course, USC ought to be saying, we don't have anybody to park. We're going to lose 1,000 parking spaces next year. We don't let anybody park on campus during the week. Where are people going to park for a Friday night game at the Coliseum? Nowhere.
Yeah.
There's nowhere to go. I mean,
if there's one year,
come down to this, go to the city council and try to get city council to pass an ordinance that you can't have weeknight games at the Coliseum. And if the USC won't protect itself, should somebody else have to step in and say you can't do that?
Yeah.
At the Coliseum?
If there's one year you shouldn't have a weeknight game in the Coliseum, it's 2018 with all the crap that's going on. It's going to be a nightmare to get to a regular game, let alone a Friday night game. So that's an epic fail on all counts.
Yeah, and especially when it comes after two road really tough Stanford and Texas road trips. That's the last place you should have a Friday night game, home or road. USC should have refused it. There were three other games in the Pac-12 that Saturday, which is weird as heck because they gave four teams a bye that week in the Pac-12. Four teams get a bye on week four. It's just odd stuff that just keeps happening in the Pac-12, really.
All right, well, let's wrap it up. We kind of keep going on and on. We can do this. That's what we can do. But we still have a bunch. So if we didn't get your question, I still have it. We'll be able to answer it next week, well, during our bye week show, heading into USC against either Washington State or Stanford. So that's Dan Weber. I'm Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed this edition of the Peristyle Podcast, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.